Hello and welcome to Digital Careers Meets, which offers insights and advice on advancing your digital career as well as making your digital hiring more effective. And in this show, I'm pleased to welcome Sian Flynn, who's an experienced HR professional and a very qualified person to speak on the subject of gender diversity. We've aimed to focus the show on the data and tech sector, but much of what we're going to discuss can be applied to any industry. Sian started her HR career in the UK with Ford when it was embracing robotics in its manufacturing processes, so saw at first hand early technology disruption. She then spent a lengthy period of time in the retail sector with Boots, first of all, before then moving to AS Watson in Hong Kong, where she became global HR head, and then she took on a position as HR head for Walmart in China. Sian then moved to Zurich, where she still lives, and took on a job as global CHRO with Adecco, one of the world's largest staffing companies, and she's now moved on and is running her own HR advisory business called Shanti Flynn. Hello and welcome to Digital Careers Meets, which is part of Barton Rock's Digital Careers podcast, where our goal is to help advance your digital career or make your digital hiring more effective. And today we're going to be talking about how gender diversity within data and technology specifically can be resolved. And a lot of course has been written on the subject of gender diversity, and we know it's a problem. But what we're going to do today is explore what organizations and individuals themselves can be doing to address it, and specifically within data and tech. But I'm confident that much of what myself and my guest, who I'll introduce in a second, we'll be talking about can be applied more broadly. But I am delighted to welcome and thank Sian Flynn for joining as my first guest to Digital Careers Meet. So very much appreciate you being involved and sparing your time, Sian. Obviously, you're now running your own consultancy, your own advisory business, shantiflynn.com. There's some very clear themes that run through that when you go onto the website. What are you passionate about? What are the things that you're a big thought leader on and an advocate of?
I suppose I do have, and you know this guy, a lot of opinions about rather a lot of things. And having now set up my advisory and had lots and lots of years of corporate experience, I can actually just say exactly what I think about any topic, which is kind of liberating. So one of my key themes is around meritocracy and the fact that it should be possible for talented people to acquire good jobs and good careers. And I think what I've noticed over the past few decades, it's much harder if you're not from a wealthy background. So, you know, students, huge amounts of debt, and that's going to deter talented young people from going into colleges, which means that you start to polarize talent into the haves and the have-nots. I would hate to think that someone who is like me, starting from my pretty modest beginnings, would not embark on, manage to enjoy and have the opportunities for growth that I've had, and also for the ability to contribute to organisations and people. So I think meritocracy is one of the biggest themes, but also ethical leadership. One of the things that I see more interestingly, in companies is that they are passionate about trying to be compliant and trying to make sure that their leaders abide by the rules of the company, the rules of law. And I think one of my other hobby horses is that that's not so true for governments these days. And I think ethical leadership is, you know, I think it's going to be the preserve of companies to actually lead the way on this and to restore us to a leadership and an expectation of leaders that they are honest and that they are factual and that they treat people well and with respect and that they're inclusive. So these are the kind of big mega themes. Sorry if that was a bit long-winded.
All I was going to interject and say is that some of those themes dovetail quite nicely into the whole diversity discussion that we're talking about today, because I think there is a responsibility on the part of governments and organisations to do their part. And I think that when I read out a couple of statistics here, which may just offer some context before we get stuck into the subject matter, 17% of the UK tech sector are women. It says, or various data points that I've taken, 22% of tech directors are women, 10% of women only hold executive positions in Silicon Valley. And I think one of the things we should talk about with the data is that there's lots of different bits of data floating around. And I think there's a bit of a overlap in some of these areas. And it also depends on how you identify or define tech, whether it's tech as an industry or tech as a functional discipline. But either way you slice and dice it, whichever way you slice and dice it, women are severely underrepresented in the data and tech sector. Although, encouragingly, another data point is that 35% of all STEM students now in the UK are women. So what do you make of those statistics, Sian?
Well, I think, you know, there's a couple of things. Well, first thing is I've got three daughters. And my husband's a physics teacher, and I've got a science degree. So it's interesting, both anecdotally from a family and from observing education, as well as being in business, is that you do notice that the behaviours of girls and women tend to be a bit skewed sometimes. So it's encouraging that there are more girls choosing STEM subjects. And this is factual, but it's still not very well understood, which is that girls in single-sex environments, education environments, will choose science and technology and physics, chemistry and maths at a much higher rate than if they're in mixed environments as they're being educated. And this is not because schools are necessarily discouraging girls, but there seems to be some invisible peer pressure that's pushing girls away from choosing science. And of course, you have to choose these subjects early. So yeah, by the time girls are 12 or 13 years old, they're already beginning to take a path. So at 16, they've already chosen subjects that will mean that they're either going to be able to follow a STEM or ICT type career path or not. Yeah. So I think one of the challenges is, how do you catch girls early enough to encourage, to mentor, to make sure that they're being guided into those subjects? But also, just again, anecdotally, my husband's observed that boys, if they're average science students, are more likely to take higher level physics than girls. So he's found that the girls in his class tend to be exceptional students. So he's not getting the full spectrum of students who, you know, the yeah, average to the high achievers. He's getting only the ones who really have a lot of self-belief. Mm. And I think this is the theme through diversity and inclusion is, you know, if you're in a position of leadership and responsibility, you've got to create an environment of inclusion that means that people feel able to take those personal risks.
Yeah, okay, understood. So it sounds like there's a bit of a confidence gap amongst women wanting to step into these types of subjects, and hence the supply chain of individuals going on to play executive roles in data and tech is a much smaller pool, essentially.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I was actually just trawling, as you do, I was Googling the top 20 tech startups in Europe. And there were some really interesting visuals. So if you look at the kind of pictures of the new startups, they're almost always a group of three young men. It's interesting how the visuals are loaded on tech startups. And I don't know whether that's because young women who, even if they're in tech, they decide not to do startups. There was lots of controversy in Silicon Valley about women not accessing funding at the same rate as their male counterparts. So if you can't get funding for your startup, that could be a problem. I don't know whether that still persists. But if you look at the medical profession, you know, more than 50% of doctors qualifying in the UK are now women. So I'm encouraged by the fact that there is a shift in a positive direction. And, you know, the jobs of the future, no matter what sector they're in, are going to have a technology component. That's unavoidable.
Fair enough. Okay. And what about international variants on, you know, the number of women in data and tech? I mean, this is probably somewhat anecdotal rather than hard data that we can draw on this conversation. But what have you seen?
It's interesting. I spent 14 years in Asia and, you know, and perhaps counterintuitively, many of the businesses that you bump into in places like Thailand and Malaysia and China, they have a significant number of women leaders and possibly more. I don't know the stats for Asia, but anecdotally, again, it was, it, you know, you could observe. I mean, we had our business in for boots. We had more women on our leadership team on our Thai retail business than we had men.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, and that was a few years back now. But it's interesting how in Asia, I think women who do aspire seem to be able to get into those positions of responsibility. Yeah. But the other factor is that there's affordable childcare in mm-hmm. Asia.
Yeah.
So people tend to have a lot more domestic help. So women who do have children, they tend to go back and follow their careers, even if they have children. Whereas with the exception of Japan, that was probably the only yeah. part of Asia where that wasn't true. But in Europe, it can be unaffordable for, and usually it's the woman, if they have a family, it's the woman who stops work. And sometimes those women, and I was one of them, I stopped for 3 years. But I went back in after 3 years. But I know a lot more women who decided to step off and then lacked the confidence, or they felt their skills had eroded to the point that they couldn't get back on the career ladder. So I think that's, again, an opportunity for employers to really try and target some of those women and bring them back.
Yeah, and I've heard, again, these are just sort of hearsay type stories, and people that I know that work for these types of organizations, you know, companies like Facebook have been very progressive in terms of childcare facilities at the office and such like. I mean, obviously large profits to be able to reinvest in those sorts of things, which obviously further enhances their employment brand. So I completely agree. And obviously I spent the best part of 20 years, so I saw that at first hand, exactly what you're saying. And I completely agree. And I'm a father of three daughters as well, by the way. So I'm also a passionate believer that, you know, this diversity discussion needs to go further. So let's move on to, you know, the here and now, because of course, a lot of people would say, well, it's all very well, Guy, Sian, talking about education, but, you know, the incubation period for that and the impact to organizations over the next couple of years, next 5 years is relatively minimal, especially when we talk about executive level positions. But why should companies currently be concerned about the underrepresentation of women? Because I suspect some CEOs would be saying, well, I'm doing my best. But what more, you know, do you think they should be doing specifically within the data and tech world?
Well, I'm sure if I met your daughters, and I'm certainly from my daughters, is it any leader who's missing out on, you know, female talent is frankly just shooting themselves in the foot. Because, you know, I know I'm biased, but, you know, I know my daughters will be hugely employable, you know, very smart, decisive, you know, so to kind of miss out on 50% of the population, it just really doesn't add up. So, you know, diversity and inclusion, and it doesn't just apply to gender, it applies to people with, you know, with disabilities, etc., is as we are moving through into a new world with COVID and probably having to live with COVID or another similar virus. You know, there are hundreds of coronaviruses. So it's, you know, this just happens to be one of many that could hit us. So I think as we enter this new world, and as we are now so privileged to have technology at our fingertips that enable so many different types of people to engage in the workforce in different ways. You know, you wouldn't know whether I was in a wheelchair or not. Mm. You know, if we were on a Zoom call, and there's nothing to stop a lot of companies employing a much more diverse set of skills and targeting people with. And I think a lot of companies, I have to admit, and I've had people in my teams who have put things on job descriptions and person specifications for hiring that I've actually looked at and said, really, why have you put that on? Because it just excludes a whole raft of people. And in order to filter, sometimes there are some criteria that put on selection and hiring processes that frankly eliminate a lot of really, really high potential, you know, interesting candidates. But if you were willing to invest in those individuals, they might not necessarily have the right experiences that you want. But if you're willing to invest in developing and training people, I'd sooner have a really smart, driven young person who lacked experience than someone who's perhaps a bit cynical and, you know, yeah, they might have 10 years worth of experience, but they're not willing to apply themselves. So I think that's what companies should be doing now. They should be really examining their hiring criteria and being a bit more bold and developing people.
Yeah, I think, being in recruitment for 25 years, I shudder to say that, of course, every time. It makes me feel incredibly old. But without any question, there is a lot of unconscious bias that creeps into organizations' hiring practices, and that does flow down from the senior management. So getting more women in the data and tech, either it's executive committees or senior management teams, I think it's about setting an example that makes younger women want to really go for it as well. And those outside of the agenda equation, I'm talking about the whole inclusive piece. But would you agree about the whole unconscious bias piece as well?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, you know, and again, I think maybe I've just been around too long now, and I'm looking back and thinking that there's an awful lot of apathy in some really big mega processes that run our world. Education is old-fashioned. I mean, if you were to pick yourself up and drop yourself into the 1600s in a classroom, with the exception of the technology support, the way the classrooms are laid out, the fact that you've got 30 kids sitting at desks, with a teacher facing them, we're incredibly old-fashioned. Universities, I think, are even worse in many ways. You've got, they're charging $9,000-$10,000 a year in the UK. And sometimes some of those courses have got 1 hour a week contact time and 14 weeks of holiday. I mean, there's no commercial business in the world that would have that kind of hourly rate. So, I think part of the problem is that we live with old processes. And I think the board governance structure is one of those, which is, it's largely an old boy network.
Yeah.
I remember, and this is, I'm not talking out of school because it was so many years ago, but, when the Boots board, who have all left, they did a deal in a boys club to buy Do It All. The women weren't even allowed in the club. So, maybe that's anecdotal, and maybe it wasn't really only done in the boys club, but it's such a believable thing, and there was, there's lots of evidence to suggest that the way boards work is largely ineffective. I mean, how many companies have hit the wall? Look at Blockbusters. Where was the board when Blockbusters didn't buy Netflix? So I don't know what's wrong with the way governance works these days. And we live with these board structures. Some boards of 12 or 14 people. And yet those companies still go very, very wrong, where they have big compliance issues, big. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's beyond just diversity. I think it's how do we choose to run our infrastructure? Yeah. Is education serving the purpose it should? And the fact that it's disadvantaging women at the moment and minorities is not really surprising, with the fact that they're centered on some fundamentally old-fashioned principles.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that there's almost, COVID perhaps is this catalyst that may come along and actually disrupt, in the same way as many digital businesses have disrupted traditional industries. And they, those traditional industries have gone out of business, then there's a real risk to educational institutions that don't actually embrace change. But that's probably a podcast in itself, I would imagine. One of the things, if we get back onto the diversity piece, the gender diversity piece, is that I've had situations as a CEO where I've talked to a group of individuals and said, right, we're going to change, we're going to do this. And we all go back to our desks and do exactly the same thing as we were doing before. And I'm sure you've sat in on meetings just like that. But how do we avoid that possibility? How do we measure advances and change? I mean, especially over a sort of a shorter term period, because data points are one thing, number of women going into tech and data and tech. But how would you like to see progress being measured? And how would you like to see CEOs being held accountable?
I mean, at the moment, it's such a unique time for everyone, this new era that we're in. And all of us are drawing on, on our experiences that we've had in the past, but none of them seem to really talk to what most people are going through today. So the data points, I think, interestingly, would be as companies start to say, work from home, for example, the work from home is an interesting idea and it works for many people that they can be flexible if they're on computers and most of their job is remote. I think creating statistics around what's the diversity of population who are remote working. So that's a new way of slicing the data to say, does that provide an advantage for women or is it a disadvantage? You know, if when my kids were smaller, it would have been a nightmare actually working from home because they would have been running around. So is there a kind of issue with the fact that, you know, some people can't work from home because their space is too small, their technology is too slow, they can't do a video conference because their signal's always cutting out. So some people will be disadvantaged by their working from home space, which might open up the avenue for, I remember in Hong Kong, I worked from something called The Hive for a while when I was doing some freelance work for freelancers and people go into it and it's incredibly fast technology where people dive in and out. So the work from home is sort of working from a kind of shared location that's set up for that.
Yeah.
So I think measuring the data in a slightly different way might be required to see how inclusive are those environments and are people being disadvantaged. And it could be young people, male and female, get disadvantaged from working from home if they've got families. I think the other thing, as you go up into the executive ranks, I think a lot of companies are trying to improve the diversity of their leaders. I remember, you know, us trying to find more female candidates with the desired experience so that we could help to diversify executive committee. I mean, Switzerland have started to put targets on their executive committees and on their boards so that over time you're supposed to be moving towards a ratio that's more acceptable. And I think where countries have done that, it's actually, you can see those, the Scandinavian countries, they've got much greater diversity. I mean, you look at the Finnish government, it's mostly women. So I think where countries and where the legislation supports it, I think on the executive committees and on boards, I think it's helpful to have some legislation and for the city and the analysts to have a bit of responsibility for that too.
Yeah.
But I think in the end, women, have to start pushing harder to access those positions and not be so easily put off. You know, there's been times in my career where I've had to really fight for the jobs I've had. And I think if I could do anything, I'd be telling women, just battle harder to get those opportunities. And once you've got a foot in the door, help other women to succeed. Because I also know quite a lot of women over the years who've not helped other women to succeed. And I think that's Margaret Thatcher was a classic example of that. You know, that's a shame that if you're in a position of strength that you help other people who may also be disadvantaged.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully people, women listening to this will be inspired by those words of wisdom, because I think the kind of the go for it is it's very broad sweeping, but important and attitudinal as well. I think that's the key. So we talked a little bit about the board structure. And I think in many respects, addressing gender diversity on a board is easier because you can go out and you can hire female non-execs and you've hit your kind of diversity stats from a governance point of view. It's much harder in those senior management ranks. And I'm not suggesting for a moment that it's easy and that CEOs are sitting on their hands, because, you know, I've been a CEO a couple of times in my career where I've wanted more women around the management table, but it just hasn't been possible. And most people would probably say, well, thanks, Guy, thanks, Sean, but I just try and hire the best person for the job. So it comes back to the pipeline of talent, I guess, is what you're going to say. And specifically in data and tech, that's critical.
Yeah, I think I actually wrote to I haven't been in touch with him, but there's a guy called Peter Roach who I worked for when I was at the Boots Company. And I got headhunted from Ford Motor Company. And it was my first director on an executive committee of a business. And it was a wholly owned subsidiary of the Boots Company. And at age 30, I had been on a small management committee looking after one plant in Ford. So I'd had some accountability sort of for the business, but not much really. It was mostly still an HR role, not really as a business leader. But this was my first business leader role where I was part of a team that was deciding on the future and the fate of the business as a whole, not just the HR agenda. And he could have gone for someone 10 years older than me. It was a fair, sizable business. He took a chance on me, even though, you know, I was not as experienced as many of the other candidates, but I was incredibly determined. And he saw something in me that he was willing to take a chance on. And he knew it was a riskier move to take me because I had lots of confidence. I was convinced I could do the job, even though I knew that I had lots and lots of knowledge gaps. And I think that's really, that is the message to leaders everywhere, is just go for it with younger talent who may not have ticked all the experience boxes, but are really fast learners, who are smart enough to learn what your business is all about, who have the right values. I know that I've bumped into so many people who are in their early 20s and 30s, and apparently and this is now, apparently there was an interesting study done on complex problem solving, and you are at your peak in your 20s and you've plateaued in your 30s, and from 40 onwards your complex problem solving skills are in decline. So if you really want to go for complex problem solving skills, you probably need to be targeting 20 year olds, not 40 year olds. So I think that's the key. If we're going to, if you're going to change the dynamic of your organization, it needs to have a bigger blend, and more views, more diversity means you're going to have more ideas and more interesting conversations, because you're going to have lots of different perspectives. I mean, if you talk to my daughters, I'm sure yours are the same. I mean, they think Facebook is for old people.
Precisely.
So, you know, if you don't have that view in your management team, you're going to miss a pretty big trick.
I agree. And in the world of digital, not to have a diverse development team, for example, when you're developing products to sell to a broad range of individuals, it's only logical, isn't it? Of course, I'm sure there's a lot more that can be done on that front. I'm going to move on to some career advice, because you've given a bit of career advice to younger women to get into data and tech, to really just go for it, and also to encourage CEOs to go for it as well and take sensible, calculated risks on individuals that can grow into the job, for example. But you've been a successful woman in business, and you've sat on three executive committees. What's the best piece of career advice you can offer women who want to move up the ladder in data and tech, and indeed men who would be tuning into this as well?
It's very interesting trying to work out what kind of education and qualification requirements are really helpful for those kinds of careers. And, you know, my middle daughter, who's 15, she's already able to code websites, for example. And, you know, they learn at school coding now. And she's passionate about coding. She's doing computer science AP. She wants to be a tech CEO. That's she told me this week, that's what she wants to do. So whenever anyone with a particular bias towards robotics. So what's interesting is how do you harness that kind of, okay, I've got an interest in that area. Now I need to tick all the right boxes that get me onto a path that's going to get me the right kind of exposure. And I would say it's starting early with tech exposure and being in a digital, even if it's through internships, or if it's finding a way to be in the working environment, as opposed to focusing purely on getting the qualifications. You need to do a blend of both. You need to have enough knowledge and understanding of the subject to be able to add value into the environment. But, you know, again, if you're hiring an engineer, most engineering companies, they have to teach their engineers what they want them to do in the end, because what's taught at universities, it gives them the grounding, the theoretical knowledge, and maybe some of the practical knowledge, but you've got to, in the end, you've got to teach the practical side of your job to individuals that are coming through. So my advice to young women or men who are trying to access a data or a IT kind of career is look for the companies that are starting to pull in talent. Start trawling and targeting possible organizations where you might be able to get some experience, even if you do it for nothing for a little while as a student.
Yeah.
And you go and you say, I'd like to just work in your company for a little while to find out what your jobs are like. I'm sure that companies that are starting up or small or medium sized would welcome a bit of free resource every now and then, particularly if they're smart people coming in. So I think that's one area where you try and get in to an organization where you can get some exposure, get some experience. And then work from the inside out. I mean, one of the companies when I was at the Adecco Group in Japan was retraining IT guys. You know, they used to work on networks and now they need to know cybersecurity. So that relearning and re-educating as the technology is changing is going to be critical, because, you know, you don't want to be a Betamax IT guy.
Yeah,
yeah. You need to be on the front foot all the time, and the AI, all of this stuff is changing so rapidly. Yeah. If you don't start looking at where the new innovative organizations are shifting, I mean, you just have to watch Elon Musk. I honestly don't know when he ever sleeps, but you know, with Neuralink and the Boring Company and all of these other, in addition to SpaceX and Tesla, I mean, he's their chief engineer.
So
I think it's like, what are these guys actually getting into? And then how do I start to tap into organizations that might be in that space, but also with a bias for what your interests are? Mm. So like if you're into health and you want technology, then go the healthcare technology route. But that requires a very particular skill set to be able to get into, I don't know, nanotechnology for the biotech industry.
Yeah. Okay.
So being deliberate, that's the summary.
Yeah. I wonder how many people will remember Betamax on this video podcast. You and I might be in the minority on that, Sian.
That's a bit of a giveaway, isn't it, really?
Okay, so I'm going to say, so making your digital hiring more effective. So if you were back in the seat of a chief HR officer and you were hiring in digital and you were trying to address the gender diversity challenge in the senior management team at the moment, where would you be channeling your energy then? So this is really just advice to prospective employers and people hiring digital professionals.
Well, I think it really does just depend on the industry that you're looking for and what kinds of, how much they've got to be up and ready to go. So if you're hiring at the very top of the tree, you would expect that person to be pretty fully operational with ideas to be able to take your strategy to the next level and deliver on existing and future goals. So in broadening, I think the problem is a lot of companies will look in the same industry as themselves. And you've got to just spread much further afield. And you're far more likely to find interesting talent. And you've got to go internationally as well. Mm. You know, I think the most important thing is that you're pulling people from places which are at the cutting edge. I mean, you and I both know when we were in Asia, everything was digital decades ago. So, you know, when I went from the UK to Hong Kong, I mean, 20 years ago nearly, we didn't have a mobile phone, whereas we went onto the underground system and even the ancient grannies had mobile phones on the train. So I think you fish where the technology is at the cutting edge. And that isn't necessarily in your industry and it's not necessarily in your geography.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the international piece is valid. I think in a post-Brexit world, that might be challenging, but we'll have to wait and see how all that plays out. But certainly, I'm seeing a lot more, an increasing amount of open-mindedness for companies to need to look outside of their sector. For example, digital talent moving into the banking sector. I've seen people who have got backgrounds from grocery retailers who have done digital and data science within those types of environments, because there just isn't the pool of financial services talent that have the data science experience and know-how. So I think there are sort of some green shoots of that happening, and particularly within the digital world where the skill sets are so limited.
And IT, ICT, you know, if you're looking at companies' infrastructure on their technology platforms, you know, most companies have moved the kind of junior and middle management jobs and some pretty big senior jobs as well into hubs around the world that are not necessarily in their headquartered countries. So Central and Eastern Europe are massive for the big support hubs, where you've got lots of technology people now consolidating into, you know, Warsaw. They're not necessarily in the most obvious place. Malaysia, you've got tech hubs in all sorts of interesting places that are not in Silicon Valley. So India, you know, the whole of Bangalore is pretty much a tech hub. So I think the most important thing is that you're spreading your wings much broader. And I think the youngest CEO in the world was this Indian kid who was 13 years old, and he was a web designer. And no, and he had to put his company was in his uncle's name because he didn't want his clients to realize he was a 13-year-old boy working from his bedroom. And he was the youngest CEO. And I was just thinking, oh my goodness, wouldn't you just want to hire him? he's an entrepreneur, set his own company up. He's learned how to design websites for American companies. And, you know, and there he is sitting in his bedroom. Yeah. So it's thinking a bit imaginatively about where the talent really is.
I know what you mean. I suspect that individual probably had a pretty competent COO and an executive chair surrounding them. So, very good. Nice. I like that that example. Look, we could talk all day on this subject. It's fantastic to get such passion and enthusiasm in the dialogue. But just in terms of a few takeaways, I mean, I'm not going to give a long list, but I think in terms of encouraging more women to get into data and tech, I mean, I know this is a, as I said earlier, fairly general sort of title, but to go for it and to have the confidence to really go for it and to embrace the opportunities that will exist. We touched on educational disruption, not to be stereotyped in terms of how you hire and where you hire from, both from an intellectual or academic perspective, but practical experience, internships. And you've also touched on, you know, chief executives and other C-suite executives hiring in an outside of the box way, looking outside of their own industries, and taking sensible and calculated risks on people who can grow into the jobs. And that's one thing that you think will help make some advances with women in data and tech. Is that a fair summary? I know we haven't addressed everything, but would that capture most of your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be I couldn't add to that. So well done, Guy, for consolidating 45 minutes conversation into.
Well, and I haven't made any notes as well. So, it shows how engaged in the conversation I have. But Sian, just a little bit about your business, just literally a minute or so on what you're doing, the types of organisations that you work with, and the types of services that you bring to the equation.
I've been working with a relatively small number of companies, but helping them with the diagnostic on their people and organization strategy, particularly those organizations who are in a stage of growth and perhaps don't have a CHRO to draw on. But in some cases, I've also been advising other HR people who have perhaps had a more limited experience, but mostly working with CEOs and boards to help them diagnose what's going on with their people strategy to give them some tips, practical insight. So, you know, I wrote a 25-page report, sounds terrible and boring, but actually it was just incredibly detailed to allow them to say, look, these are things you can actually do tomorrow to improve your organization. And here are some things you need to look for. Sometimes people don't realize that certain things are a problem in their organization. So I've been helping organizations with that. I've also been doing some keynote speaking, some of these interviews as well, but really just acting, using my background, my knowledge and experience to help businesses. And also because I've sat on so many executive boards where we've reviewed the business health of other parts of the organization, it's bringing to bear that how the people strategy drives your business strategy.
Yeah.
And sometimes companies really miss this. They talk about people being their most important asset, but then they don't behave that way. And as a result, their businesses don't do as well as they should. So that's the core of my my offering, and also just being able to be practical in I've worked with a lot of consultants and often they bring lots of great insight, but having someone who's actually been there and done various things in complex situations and It just adds a different slice.
Well, that's it. Like and subscribe to this channel. There's lots of other great guests that are going to be appearing over the course of the next few weeks and months. And I'm going to be doing these Digital Careers Meets sessions every week. You can also listen to the audio versions on our Digital Careers podcast, which is available on all podcast platforms. And you can head to the knowledge section of my website, bartonrock.com, and find all my podcasts and articles there. So again, a big thank you to you, Sian. Very much enjoyed
Thanks,
the conversation.
Guy.
And good luck with everything.
Good luck with you as well. Thanks very much, guys.